everybody. I'm excited to welcome Dennis Crowley on the podcast. Dennis is somebody that likes to build things that bring people together and build communities, whether that's building Foursquare, which currently has 50 million active users, or Street FC, which connects people that are interested in playing pickup street soccer, or building Kingston Stockade FC, which is an NPSL team that has been around since 2016 and is the reason we have him on today. So thanks for jumping on, Dennis.
Hey, thanks for having me on the pod. Excited to be.
So I was hoping you could take us back in time to the beginning days of Alphabet City FC, which I understand to be kind of a beer league soccer team that you started with your friends in Brooklyn and kind of is the birthplace of Stockade FC.
Yeah. I mean, we used to just play seven-a-side soccer, you know, in the Lower East Side of New York City. And not hyper, you know, it was competitive. It's not like hyper-competitive. It's seven-a-side. But like, I hadn't played soccer since I was like 5 years old before I stepped on the pitch with these guys. And it was just, you know, a team that my buddies put together. And a lot of the guys that were playing in the league were people that played in high school, that played in college. And so it was a super, super steep learning curve for me. But at the time I was, you know, knee deep in building Foursquare, and it was like a nice, perfect, really well needed break from like being the leader of the company to being like a nobody on the field. Like nobody even wanted to pass to me. And so, you know, I kind of fell in love with the game and just playing regularly from that point on. But yeah, like long story short, like we were having beers one day after a match and we're talking about like what would have to happen in the world for our team, our seven-a-side team, to like play the Red Bulls in this thing called the U.S. Open Cup. Like, how does that even work? And I kind of fell down this rabbit hole of learning like how all of the different leagues are interconnected. You know, everything from, you know, from youth soccer to rec soccer like we were playing, to, you know, lower division USASA, NPSL clubs. And that kind of led me into, you know, discovering teams like Chattanooga and Detroit City FC at a time where in the NPSL, and just being like, oh, wow, there's a lot of things you could make here that it would be meaningful in the U.S. soccer ecosystem.
Yeah, so, you know, I would suggest to anybody that's listening now to go check out these Medium pieces that Dennis wrote. The concept behind it is open source soccer. The first piece, as lore would have it, you know, that bar meeting, June 3rd, 2015, at a bar called Angry Wades in Brooklyn, this hypothetical question of, you know, what would it take Alphabet City FC to play New York Red Bulls, and you kind of landed on the Open Cup. Then 14 days later, you attended a U.S. Open Cup game between the Cosmos, who were D2 at the time for NASL, and they beat NYCFC in front of 10,000 fans. Yeah. Can you describe what it was like to kind of wander into this game after probably not hearing much about the U.S. Open Cup before that?
Yeah, we just went to go really check it out. I mean, like, I was also really interested in the Cosmos at the time, where the Cosmos were the story team in the 70s and 80s. And then, you know, when that version of the NASL went defunct, it kind of went away, and then it got resurrected. And then another group ended up the club has lived 1,000 lives. And the idea that someone had kind of resurrected it from the dead, put it back in this league, you know, qualify for the Open Cup and then beat an MLS team, I was just like, holy cow, there's like this whole underbelly of folklore and mythology in U.S. soccer, and like nobody knows anything about it. Like it's not fed to us by you know, most of the sports outlets that were covering stuff at the time. And I was just really into it. You know, like the Cosmos were starting to gain some notoriety in the city. They had hired an ad agency that put up kind of like stickers everywhere. And, you know, they were trying to make it a thing, and it's just like it really added on to the narrative. And so, you know, I looked at it as like, these are entrepreneurs that bought a soccer brand and then built infrastructure around it and got themselves into the Open Cup. And I was like, could we as entrepreneurs like do something at a much smaller level at a much lower cost and then try to qualify for the Open Cup, you know, like, you know, as a Division 4 team? And then what would happen, right? Like, that was kind of the question. Like, is it possible to start a club from scratch and get it into the Open Cup? You know, that's kind of where we started.
Yeah, so my dad was, you know, I grew up in northern New Jersey. He was a big basketball guy. But then I kind of, you know, I got into lower league soccer right around 2010 World Cup. And then I got talking to him, and he let me know he went to a Cosmos games in the 70s, and he's like, there's 70,000 people at, you know, Old Giants Stadium, and I had no idea that it existed. And now Cosmos are kind of on the NISA banner as, like, a possible club, but I'm not sure where they stand on that.
I didn't know that. That's a new thing.
Yeah, I digress. So I'm not sure what's going on there.
By the way, just so you can put it in the show notes, there's an awesome documentary called Once in a Lifetime, which I think it might still be on Netflix, and it's about the Cosmos in the 70s and 80s and bringing, you know, Pelé in and what that did for the brand and what that did for soccer in the U.S. And it's really awesome. I haven't watched it in years, but it's really good. It's called Once in a Lifetime.
Okay, yeah. I wrote it down. I'll check it out. All right. So a couple days after this Open Cup game where you saw Cosmos beat NYCFC, you were giving a presentation to a group of hopeful entrepreneurs, and there's a slide that caught your attention that said, if there's something you want to see in the world and it doesn't yet exist, go out and make that thing. And then 10 minutes after that presentation, the wheels were in motion. And then less than a year later, Kingston Stockade was kicking off their first season of NPSL at Dietz in Kingston. At the time, it seemed like you were still very involved in Foursquare. So it begs the question to me is, how are you able to go from barroom conversation to active squad in less than a year? Like, what were some of those conversations like that got it off the ground?
Well, a lot of it's like any entrepreneurial venture is just about like doing a little bit every day until the thing gets momentum. Right? With startups, people talk about the process of going from zero to one, which is going from nothing to something, and it's just hard to do. And you know, you basically have to like show up every day at your make believe startup job and do enough work that you can build off it the next day and then build off it the next day. And you know, I try to do this in the blog post, like making a lower level soccer club. Like there's a thousand things you have to do, and you can't do all 1,000 in a day or a month, right? But you can do all 1,000 in a year, and that's kind of what we did. I just kind of made a list of all the things and started going out and doing it. And like you know, you look at like last season, for example, like how much Stockade am I doing in a given season, right? Like you're going and you're doing you're doing an hour a day over the course of, you know, 3 or 4 months. And so it's like, it's a part-time gig for everyone that works on the team, but everyone just does like a little bit at a time and it kind of slowly works out.
Yeah, that makes sense. So, I mean, I'm quasi familiar with the Hudson Valley area, you know, more like Warwick area, but you know, why Kingston? Why did that stick out as a good place to start the project?
It was less about like where was a good place to put a team, and more about like, you know, my wife and I had a house in Kingston. Like, we have a house, like we live in New York, and then we have a house in Kingston. And you know, it was just kind of like, well, it'd be really cool if there was a game to go to this weekend. And you know, there was a couple of things happening at once, right? There was like this epiphany of like, it'd be really cool to have something like this in Kingston, and then go in the Cosmos game and being like, wait a second, these guys have built this club from scratch. And then, you know, I was playing pickup in Marbletown. There's a pickup soccer league there. And some of the guys, I was like, these guys are really good. Like, why hasn't anyone ever done like a high level club up here? And then those three things kind of happening together just kind of made the club come into existence. And then again, it's just like the brute force of doing a little bit every day to try to make it happen.
So at the time, it doesn't seem like there's much of a public blueprint in 2015. You mentioned in one of the pieces reaching out to some of the clubs that had done it already, like Detroit City and Chattanooga. And I'm very familiar with those as a NISA Bobcats fan. But you mentioned they were super friendly. So what kind of things did they offer you early on that were helpful for you to get the club off the ground?
A lot of it is just like, you know that saying, like, you gotta see it to be it? You ever hear that?
Yeah.
Right? And so it's like, if you want to be a pro athlete, like, you try to meet other pro athletes or just see that they're normal people. If you want to be an entrepreneur, if you want to, you know, like, whatever your goal is, if you can find a way to connect with those people and then come to this realization, like, they're just humans like you are, you and I are, and they just go and they did the things that needed to get there, right? It takes this thing that's totally unachievable and turns it into, you know, something that's like understandable. And that's kind of the conversation I had with Chattanooga and Detroit. You know, they're like, hey, we're not like storied expert soccer people. We're just a group of guys that got together and decided to make this club. And, you know, like, here's how much it costs. I'm like, oh gosh, it's not crazy expensive. Here's how long it took. Here's how many people manage it. Here's what's easy. Here's what's hard. It's like getting a cheat sheet to do it. And then I got the same kind of cheat sheet. It's like a bit of like a cheat sheet and like a pep talk from the guys at Chattanooga too. It's really just a peek behind the curtain. Like, what does it take to start one of these things? And they're like, it's a real pain in the ass. It's really not that hard. It's just a lot of work. Get a couple buddies, grind it out over the course of a year. And, you know, that's kind of what we did. But, you know, you have to see it to realize you can do it. And that's one of the reasons I wrote those blog posts. Like, you may think this is a really impossible thing to do. Let me break it into 500 steps, you know, 1,000 steps that you can do it too. And this is how much it costs. This is how much time it takes. This is how many people you need. This is how many games you got to play. This is how much you got to travel. You know, I continue to hear from people that even just seeing that spelled out that way, like having a body of work on the internet that people can refer to is helpful in just wrapping your head around, like, okay, how do I go from 0 to 1 with this thing?
Yeah, I mean, those blog posts are amazing. You post all your data, talk about the pitfalls early on. And yeah, I'm sure you've inspired a lot of clubs, because as soon as you look into maybe starting a club, it pops up as a pretty valuable resource.
I talk to folks all the time about this stuff. It's cool. It's like a cool little like legacy that's out there from the club. Like, hey, we did all this stuff that helped other people start their own clubs.
Sure. So that first piece you set out, so let's build a professional soccer team from scratch. And you set a couple goals. One was qualify for the U.S. Open Cup by 2020. Another was give the best players in the Hudson Valley an opportunity to play at a high level on a national stage. Another, inspire youth players to stick with soccer. Two more, create more fans of the game and inspire other clubs to create clubs like Stockade FC in their own communities. So that first goal, 2018, you all qualified for the U.S. Open Cup. You had an away match against Long Island Rough Riders, so your first goal was achieved. Can you talk about the process of qualifying for U.S. Open Cup as an MPSL squad for those of us that aren't as familiar with it?
Yeah, so when did we qualify? We qualified 2017, right?
Probably qualified 2017 to play in 2018. Does that sound right?
Yeah, that's right. That's okay. Right. Yeah, because I knew it wasn't our first year. the NPSL historically has been granted a certain number of slots every year for their top teams. And, you know, the number of slots for the Open Cup varies every year. It's a little bit of a black box. But the NPSL has a thing called like the power rankings, and you know, there could be 100 teams in the league, there might be 70 teams in the league, whatever it is. They're all ranked from 1 to 100, and let's say the NPSL gets 5 spots for the Open Cup, then the top 5 clubs in that power ranking will be the ones that qualify for the spots. And I think the year that we qualified, it might have been like 12 spots went, and like we had won the conference championship, so we had one of those top 12 spots, and that is what gave us the access to the cup. And then, you know, the people that run the U.S. Open Cup do the draw, so you always play someone locally, and our local team was in Long Island.
Gotcha. And it looked like you were, you know, maybe close to qualifying last year. You guys won your conference and then lost in the playoffs. Did it work that...
Yeah, we've been close to qualifying twice, right? Like... It's a real even as you mentioned, it kind of brings me back to the moment where it's like you lose that game in the playoffs and you're like, not only do we lose the playoff games, we lost the Open Cup bid, and that hurts the most. But yeah, would love to get back. Would love to have another shot at it.
Yeah, I mean that's pretty harsh. That yeah, your playoffs double as both that and the Open Cup, whereas you know, the NISA clubs that I'm a fan of get these automatic qualifying bids just by being Division III, as I understand it. And they've got a game next week, Tuesday, against Westchester, who's, I believe, an NPSL squad, too, that's a storied club. So it could be a tough challenge for the Bobcats.
Yeah. Even in NISA, you still have to – not all clubs qualify. You have to be top, you know, 25% of the clubs, right?
I'm not sure. I'd have to double-check that. But, yeah. Anyway – Let's see. So I wanted to fast forward to current day Stockade FC, or at least the 2023 version, before we look ahead to 2024. So in your latest piece, it was entitled 7 Years of Lessons Learned in Lower League Soccer, and you set out a series of new goals for the club. You describe how early on you were somewhat obsessive about holding to the break-even model you set out to build from the outset, but now your goals have changed, and you're going to start focusing on building up instead of building down, which is developing local players and local coaches through Stockade's Futures. So can you talk about Stockade Futures and how you did in 2023 and what kind of changes you're looking to make in 2024?
Yeah, I mean, like, we're at the stage of this stuff where it's like, you know, do something instead of doing nothing. And sometimes you get so focused on just putting the first team on the field that, like, you're not focused on all the other things you can do. One big thing that we did from last year to this year is over the summer, instead of just, we used to do like these 1 day clinics, like, here's how you get local kids exposure to Stockade players. And we went from 1 day clinics to 2 weeks worth of camps. The 2 weeks of the camp is great. Like, it gives our guys a chance to get into coaching. It gives local coaches a chance to come over and see how we do our coaching. It gives the players access to, you know, like, the same type of drills that our first team players are doing. So, like, they're learning new drills and they're getting exposure to that. So it's like baby steps, really, to getting there. And, you know, we're doing the same thing this year. We're doing a couple more camps. We're trying to do outreach with local youth clubs, so they can almost be like Stockade affiliates, right? With the idea being like, hey, when and if we do have a youth team, like, we have a first team, we have a U23 team, we have a U20 team. You know, it's conceivable in the future we'll go down, you know, U18, U16, U13, whatever it is. And, you know, we'll be the magnet club for other folks in the Hudson Valley. But we're not there yet. Like, we're doing it for the U20s, we're doing it for U23, we're doing it for the first team. And so, you know, it's really just doing more of that.
Gotcha. Yeah. So also, too, it looked like you guys were displaced from your home stadium in Kingston, Dietz Stadium, which is undergoing a renovation through a state grant. And you played last season at Poughkeepsie, and you're doing it again, which is, what, about half hour, 45 from Kingston?
Yeah, it's probably like a 30-minute drive, like, stadium to stadium.
Can you talk about some of the positives of playing the home games down there and then some of the negatives about that?
Yeah, the positives are the stadium's beautiful, right? It's a huge stadium. It's got modern locker rooms and restrooms and a concession stand. And it's a really beautiful place for us to have home games. You know, hopefully Dietz, our normal home stadium, when it's done with the renovation, not this summer, next summer, it'll be ready for next year. Like, it you know, matches some of the quality there. You know, the other thing is, like, it's given us access to a different type of fan base, right? Even though it's only 30 minutes away, like, 30 minutes is kind of a drive, yeah, right? And so a lot of the people that are buying season tickets, we recently found out, are from Poughkeepsie, more so than they are from Kingston. And so my hope is that, you know, those folks in Poughkeepsie will become fans of the club and be like, yeah, I'll make the trip up to Kingston. Kingston's a cool city. Like, we'll make a day out of it. And so I think that's going to be a thing for us in 2025. We're back at Dietz, and I'm hoping that the attendance numbers take a really big jump after that.
So what are you most looking forward to about going back home in the newly renovated stadium in Kingston?
From like a selfish perspective, it's a lot closer to my house, right? So I got three little kids. And this idea of, okay, I got to pack up all the stuff and then drive down there a couple hours early. Then my wife has to pack up the kids and then drive down to the games. And then the baby has to sleep and has to leave. It's a lot, right?
Yeah.
And so when the stadium's 10 minutes from your house, it's just like, oh, yeah, I left a bag of balls in the garage. I'll just go back and get them. No big deal. You know, and so it's just logistically, it's a lot easier. The other thing is, it's like, you know, the club is Kingston Stockade. Like, it's there for Kingston, and it just feels there's just more energy when it's in Kingston. The stadium's a little smaller, right? They're fixing the stadium, but they're not like expanding it, right? It's not like it's going to have 5,000 seats. It's going to have the same 2,500 seats, you know, which is a good size venue for us. And sure. I just, you know, there's a lot of stuff that's happening in Kingston every single year. all these new families are moving up there, all this new development. It's like, it's just a really cool town. And like, you know, it'll be awesome to be back there and be like, look at all the stuff that's going on here. Like, Kingston is just, it's going to be like really kind of popping on Saturday nights.
Did it grow a lot more as a city, you know, with 2020 and the pandemic kind of pushing people out of New York a little more?
I think a lot of people, a lot more people moved up to that area, or they had second homes. They decided they were just going to live there. Mm. Right. Yeah. You know, and then that also caused a lot of new restaurants, a lot of new bars, a lot of new shops. Like, the town is just going through this renaissance. It's been happening for like 10 years, but it seems like it's really accelerated recently. And, you know, when families move up with their kids, like, Stockades is a great thing, great, super fun thing to do with your kids too. So, I'm super excited to get back to Kingston next year.
Yeah, I bet. And, I started off as a Premier League fan when U.S., you know, they didn't qualify for the 2018 World Cup, and then I picked Tottenham. Mm-hmm. Then I went in this rabbit hole of lower league soccer, and my girls just absolutely love going to Bobcats games. It's like a cheap night out.
Yeah.
Easy to get to, and you know, the players come up to them after the game. My daughter had, you know, all the signatures on it, so I love lower league soccer, so thanks for doing it.
Yeah, I mean, going back to that, like, see it to be it thing, right? Like, the youth players get their autographs from the first team players that come over and sign autographs at the end of the game. Like, they're just there. They're like, these are normal guys. These are normal people that grew up in my town playing at a high level. You know, the club, Stockade has been around long enough that the kids that were, like, banging on the fence as, like, seven-year-olds, like, they're going to play for us in, like, 2 years. Like,
it's cool.
That's cool. Yeah. We're not there yet, but we're just about there.
So I got a couple more questions for you. One is, you started the club in 2015, and since then I think that we're starting to see some major shifts in lower league soccer. You know, you have teams like Annapolis Blues, which are close to where I am. Mm-hmm. Attendance numbers are 7,000, and then basically like any of Michael Hitchcock's clubs are bringing in some awesome attendance numbers. So if you had to go back to 2015 and restart the clubs, what kind of things would you do differently that you would suggest to people?
I don't know what else I would do differently. If anything, just maybe like make it more of like a full-time gig, if not my full-time gig, someone else's gig.
Gotcha.
Right? Like it's been a part-time job for the staff that runs it for the longest time. And so it's, you know, it's a part-time job. It, like, even though it's great, it's just like, it's a part-time thing. Like, we do the season's over, you know, a couple people are doing camps and other things, but like, you know, for it to really grow, there needs to be like people that are, you know, full, like, nurturing it full time.
Sure.
And so that's probably the primary thing. I really should reach out to Hitch and see, like, you know, what is his playbook for getting 3,000, 4,000 fans at a game? Like, our record is like 1,400. And it could just be that he's in a bigger market. Like, how many people live in Annapolis, you know?
Yeah, I'm not sure the metro area. It's a really walkable town. So maybe that's part of it. They also do a season ticket package where you get a jersey with a season ticket purchase. That seems to work really well. But I don't know. You'll have to reach out to him. I'm certainly not the guru in that area.
Yeah, yeah. It's just, I mean, like, I feel like there's more we could be doing. I just don't know what it is, right? Like, is it conceivable that Stockade has 3,000 people per game? Maybe, right? I don't know how to get it there.
1,000's pretty good.
It's so small. It's like 20.
Yeah.
Yeah. 1,000. I mean, we're in a town of like 20,000 people. It seems like Annapolis is like 45,000 people, so roughly maybe double the size of it. Mm. So double the size. But you're saying 7,000 people. That's a lot of fans.
That's what they announce, at least. You know, you know how butts and seats it works, probably. But it's pretty cool. I mean, the atmosphere is definitely rocking. And the Bobcats, I'd say, you know, summer nights they get about 1,000. It's a 5,000 seat stadium, so it feels pretty full in there a lot of the times.
That's pretty good, yeah.
Yeah. So I've got two more questions. One is about the Open Cup.
Yeah, shoot.
You know, we're in March, and NPSL squads definitely depend on college players a lot. So how do you fill an Open Cup roster, or how does an NPSL squad typically fill an Open Cup roster when the games are played preseason or before the college players are available?
Yeah, there's been some date changes in the Open Cup since we played in it. So when we played, it was in May. So we had access to some of those players. So it wasn't an issue. You know, the dates keep getting moved back, and so it's more of an issue now. Like, we haven't had to deal with it just because we haven't qualified. But I think what we would do is, you know, our squad is always is 50-50, 50% college kids and 50% kids that have just finished up or maybe 2 years out of college. And so the roster would be kind of stacked with that latter half.
Gotcha. Okay.
You find some way to make it work, even if it means that some of the kids have to go and get permission from their coaches.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, I've always wondered that just because it seems like it would be way more competitive if the Open Cup games were in May or June when that actual roster is, you know, on the field. So I feel for you guys.
Yeah, it's a tricky thing. Are the games starting soon? Like, when's the
Next week. Yeah, Bobcats have a game March 17. I'm pretty sure that most of them start next week. I don't think they've announced how to watch them yet, but I guess we'll figure it out.
Yeah, that's tough. I mean, even from like our point of view, it would be very difficult for us to get a stadium. Like, let's say we had an Open Cup bid, we were hosting. Dietz is not usable; it's still in construction. Marist is where we play, is a college. College gets first dibs; they're super busy, right? Maybe we'd be doing like a Wednesday night game, which isn't ideal. I'm sure we could squeeze it in somehow, but maybe that'll be a problem we have to worry about next year.
It would be a nice problem to have, I would imagine. It would check off one of the goals.
I would love to have that problem again.
Yeah. And hosting in the Hudson Valley was one of the goals for up to 2026, which is an exciting time to be a soccer fan in the U.S.
Yeah, for sure. I'd love to host a home game, and that's going to be awesome.
So I've got one last question. I'm going to ask you to put on your NPSL board hat for a second and just ask you a little bit about the future of NPSL. From our perspective in the Mid-Atlantic, we have so many teams that are exciting. And it's not just the Blues. I think Virginia Dream's a really cool brand. The Frederick team's a really cool brand. What is the future of NPSL? Is there professional aspirations right now, or is it kind of, you know, hold steady and see how the league does as it's currently operating? Or can you talk about
that? Just for the sake of clarity, I'm no longer on the board.
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
I was on the board for a couple of years, and I'm no longer on the board. I don't know. I've got a lot of like mixed feelings about the NPSL. I think it was a great place for Stockade to be, and it helped us launch our club, as did Chattanooga and as did Detroit. But there's serious competition from other leagues, and you know, you see all these new clubs coming in, and some of them go to NPSL, a lot of them go to USL, a lot of them go to UPSL. So I think the landscape has shifted a lot, and I think that the NPSL still has to continue to innovate in order to remain competitive.
Yeah, that makes sense. And I actually lied to you. I did have one more thing written down. It was from your last 2023 piece. Yeah, it's probably the toughest question I'm going to ask. You said, "The politics of lower league soccer have crushed my soul more than I've cared to admit." Could you give a little insight into that? Because as a casual observer, I have some guesses at what that could be, but I'm curious to hear it from you. And then we'll let you get out of here. And thanks so much for coming on.
Yeah, there was a group of us in 2016, 2017 that had like really ambitious plans for like what could you do with the league, like the NPSL, like why is it 100 teams? Why is it 1,000 teams? Why aren't there multi tiers in every conference? Why aren't we doing some kind of pro rel between them? It just seemed like a blank canvas to do some amazing, innovative work in the U.S. soccer ecosystem, and it's been very. I found it just very challenging. I found that the people that are not interested in innovating, people want to keep the status quo, and it's been very frustrating in lots of ways. There's a lot here. There's a whole other podcast, but like there's. You know, every league has its pros and cons. Like I'm not a huge fan of the hands-off approach that the USSF takes on things. You know, it's like, hey, lower levels, you organize amongst yourselves, right? Like, I just wish there was there just needs to be better leadership, right? Just throughout the entire system, not just like, you know, you can talk all you want about the drama with the US Open Cup. Between the MLS and the U.S. Open Cup, about jockeying for position with D2 and D1 status, but like under those three or four headlines, there's all this other drama happening, D3, D4, under the PLS, outside the PLS, aligned with USASA, not aligned with USASA, right? Like, someone's going to come in and organize that stuff. Like, the reason that the system is so chaotic and unstructured is because there's no one providing structure and organization to it, and it's just clearly mismanaged in many ways.
It's
a shame, because there's so much that we could do here.
I think us lower league fans were definitely disappointed by the U.S. Open Cup decisions before the season. Like, how cool is it to see Detroit City take down Columbus Crew at Hamtramck in Detroit, and see the run that was it Louisville took to the Open Cup final. It's all a shame.
It'll get there eventually. I think there's people that are just like protecting their own self-interest as opposed to trying to make something that's great. Let me clarify, my opinions are Dennis's opinions and not like Stockade opinions, or they're not, you know, certainly not NPSL opinions. I'm not affiliated with the board or anything related to it. So
sure. Yep. And we can end there. Thanks so much for your time. I appreciate you taking the time out of your busy day to talk Stockade FC. It's always fun to hear about lower league clubs.
Super fun. Always fun to chat lower level soccer. Always happy to make time. So
cool. All right. Thanks, Dennis.